meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you so much, ICANN staff. Welcome all participants and observers to this 11th meeting of the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability Workstream 2, a Human Rights Subgroup, on November 15, 1900 UTC. A good evening to many of you, a very early good morning from IETF in Seoul here. I'm very happy to have seen you all, and many of you. Some I've met for the first time in person at the ICANN meeting in Hyderabad, where we have been able to do some great work. And I am afraid that we might have exhausted some of the people from the drafting team, because received some apologies from some, and I see there are no people from the drafting team on the call, so we might have been asking too much from them. But luckily, we have been able to come to a drafting team consensus on a working document that I greatly hope to discuss with you today. We've received apologies from Anne Eichmann-Scalisi, Matthew Shears, and Tatiana Tropina, and I'd like to ask if anyone has any changes or updates to their statements of interest that they would like to declare? No? Then I would like to ask ICANN staff to take a roll call from the Adobe room and ask people who are only on the audio bridge and haven't made themselves known yet to please do so.
Hello, Ralph. This is Yvette. Could, if I may, just one moment. Whomever is on the 343 number, 291-1273, if you can hear me, can you please identify for the record? Okay, maybe they can't hear me. I'll try another method. Sorry, Mel. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Yvette, and thank you very much for the good care ICANN staff is taking of facilitating this work. As said, we made quite some progress with the drafting team in Hyderabad, and my great thanks to Matthew, Greg, Tatiana, and Jorge, who've all really contributed in the spirit of consensus to come to a draft that I hope to discuss with you today. Except from except from having worked on this document, we also already started some work on another document, which is the next phase of our work. But to keep things structured and orderly, I think it would be good if we first work on this, and then at the next point on the agenda or in the following meeting, we'll work on the other documents to deliver all our deliverables for the to the CCWG in time, as we were mandated to do. So, has anyone got any additions to the agenda before we dive into the document? No agenda bashing, thank you very much. Then there is one more announcement I have to make. We have currently three open questions to ICANN Legal, and unfortunately, we haven't heard back from ICANN Legal, so I'd like to ask the staff to follow up with that and to also inform the legal committee of the CCWG about the questions we've asked, and so to see if we can get answers to them so that will not form a hurdle in continuing our work. I see from Karen Mulberry in the chat that we will have the responses from ICANN Legal next week. That is great. So we're looking forward to that. So then, without further ado, I'd like to go into the document. Staff, would you please be so kind to pull up the drafting team working consensus document? And at this moment, I think I will ask Greg and Jorge, who have joined the call, to give us a perhaps a quick introduction to the document, and then subsequently take us through step by step, and I can also facilitate where it is, because this is joint work, and I would definitely not want to claim the merits of all this document, because this was clearly very much a joint work. Greg, Jorge, who would like to start off?
Oh, this is Greg. I'm happy to jump in first.
Please come in, Greg.
And I see Jorge says that his connection is awful. Hopefully mine is somewhat better. Speaking to you from rainy Hollywood, Florida. In terms of this document, I think this is one of the things I like about this now is it's a distillation of a number of concepts that were discussed and written at in originally in somewhat greater length in the second iteration. Of a document examining the framework, interpreting the language of the bylaw and can create a framework of interpretation. So I think it's actually fairly succinct, which is probably as surprising to me as anybody else, especially given my involvement. In any case, we begin very simply with followed the previous format of breaking the text into clauses or sub-sentences going through it. We found as we did this that we could recombine some of the clauses that we had parsed into smaller pieces, so that also helps make the document more succinct and frankly a little more readable too. We begin, as we always do, with the within the scope of its mission language. We've put the actual mission language into an annex at the end of this document for readability, so you don't have to wade through it before you get to any actual interpretation, which is what the document is supposed to offer. The statement here, I think, speaks for itself, although I can read it out loud. It's not long, which is part of the value of the document. The mission establishes the boundaries of ICANN's core value, probably should be capitalized, to respect human rights. Due to the broad scope of human rights, attention to this limitation is necessary to ensure that ICANN will not step outside of its defined scope and mission. In this regard, any interpretation of the application of the human rights core value provided in the framework of interpretation must be checked against ICANN's mission to ensure compliance with the general limitations provided in this part of the bylaw. Again, emphasizing the mission statement's boundary nature for ICANN's activities. I don't know if there are any questions or comments on this initial point. I don't see anything.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Greg. Indeed. So let's invite comments on this part, and I will try to take notes about the comments directly in the Google Docs. Suggestions there are also marked, so we can directly work on them. Cavus, we are reading from the text that is on the screen in the Adobe room. Within the scope of its mission, so it's the first row, or actually the second row of the table. So I see there are no comments, neither from Jorge, who is on an awful connection. I see Jorge typing.
Attends, je fais comment pour mettre ça?
Non, vas-y, tu peux écouter, mais attends. Parce que moi, je peux me mettre ici, sur le...
I hear people speaking French. it's Swiss French, if I do not if I'm not mistaken. So that could be Marcus.
Yes, hello, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well, Marcus. And we also heard the conversations you were having. Do you have a comment? Would you like to come in?
Sorry, I apologize. We were a bit late. I'm here with Anne-Rachelle.
That's great, Marcus. We are currently discussing the cleaned-up consensus document of the working group. And we're giving this a first reading and gathering comments from the group. So Greg just finished with the first table, with the first row from the table within the scope and mission, within the scope of its mission. And it seems that we do not have any comments or suggestions on that. So I'd like to ask Greg to take us to the next row in the table. Greg?
Thank you. Yeah, Greg Shatney here. The next row of the table interprets the clause within the scope of other core values and begins, it is important to stress that the human rights bylaw is a core value and not a commitment. Quoting briefly from the bylaws, the commitments reflect ICANN's fundamental compact with the global internet community and are intended to apply consistently and comprehensively to ICANN's activities. Back to interpretation. In contrast, core values are not necessarily intended to apply consistently and comprehensively to ICANN's activities. Rather, the core values are subject to the following interpretive rules in the bylaws, and we've clipped the pertinent language out here. The specific way in which core values are applied individually and collectively to any given situation may depend on many factors that cannot be fully anticipated or enumerated. Situations may arise in which perfect fidelity to all core values simultaneously is not possible. Accordingly, in any situation where one core value must be balanced with another potentially competing core value, the result of the balancing must serve a policy developed through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process or otherwise best serve ICANN's mission. So that is the classic, now classic, core value statement taken directly from the bylaws. The human rights, and back to interpretation. I see some questions in the chat. I don't know if we want to deal with those right now or get through the section first.
Let's continue with the section, Greg, I'd say.
Okay, let's note a question specifically Aubrey's, I think. The human rights, and I see Daniel Appleman as well. The human rights bylaw needs to be balanced against other core values in the case where not all core values can be fully adhered to simultaneously. Furthermore, this interpretive rule recognizes that there must be flexibility in applying the core values based on, quote-unquote, many factors that occur, quote-unquote, in any given situation. This is also made clear in the core value section of the bylaws, which states that the core values are intended to guide, and the word guide seems important, ICANN in its decisions and actions. The bylaws also prominently stress that the core values have to be respected. ICANN, quote-unquote, quoting again, probably should have a citation after this for where exactly we're citing from. ICANN will act in a manner that complies with and reflects ICANN's commitment and respects ICANN's core values. Before going back to the written language, I think it's an interesting comparison here between the word the words comply with and reflect, as applies to commitments, and a different word, respect, when applied to core values. Finally, there is no legal hierarchy. I'm not sure if we need the word legal. There's no legal hierarchy among the core values according to the bylaws. The balance must be determined on a case-by-case basis without automatically favoring any particular core value. The result of a balancing test cannot cause ICANN to violate any commitment, as commitments are binding. The other core values are set forth in Annex 2 of this document.
Thank you very much, Greg. And I think that there is also the answer to Avery's question. Avery, does that seem like an answer to your question? That is a... Avery, we hear a lot, but we do not hear you. Avery, maybe you can either get a dial out or type your answer or your question. I'm happy to read it out. Avery is saying, so are you saying a core value can be violated? I am saying that the result, I'm quoting here from the second to last sentence from the interpretation, the result of a balancing test cannot cause ICANN to violate any commitment as commitments are binding. I see Cavus has a question and has his hands up. So, Cavus, please come in.
Yes, good evening, good morning, good day to everybody. I am asking the guest why in the third line of that sentence...
Cavus, we hear you very, very softly. It's very hard to hear you.
Can you hear me now? Is it okay?
It's better.
Is it okay now? Okay, thank you. In the text, sorry, with finally... The third line said balancing test cannot cause. I am not sure whether we could use the verb can. It might be other verb. Can in ability verb. Anything could can. Anything can do anything. So I think either have may not or would not or should not or something else. But not cannot. I don't think that we can use this verb of ability here, cannot cause. Yes, it can cause. Perhaps if you say may not cause or should not cause or whatever you want, but not cannot.
Okay, so Cavus is suggesting that we change cannot into may not. I think
or
that could be okay, so I'm adding that as a suggestion to the Google Doc. I see we have a follow-up question from, or should not. Okay, should not. Shall not, is Jorge saying now. So I'm keeping it with shall not. Shall is too strong?
This is Greg. I think it has to be strong. Commitments cannot, must not be violated. I would go with must not. It is supposed to be strong. That is the point. That's actually the entire point of the contrast between commitments and core values, is that there is a certain flexibility with regard to core values. Although the idea is to be as to have fidelity to all the core values as much as possible within the balancing test, but there is no balancing test for commitments. The commitments must be met. Period. End of story. I would go with must, which I think is the clearest.
Okay, great. So the result of a balancing test must not cause ICANN to violate any commitment, as commitments are binding. And I also see a suggestion made by David McCauley, that is, the result of a balancing test must not be permitted to violate any commitment. I have a slight preference for the earlier, but I will not die in a ditch over it. So I'll leave it now, must not cause ICANN to violate, and then we'll take the wordsmithing to the list, if you don't mind, because I have one question open from Avery and one from John LaPrice. And the question from Avery was, Avery says, so values which are not commitment cannot be violated. That's indeed a good question. So the commitments are different from the core values. And does that mean that core values can be violated in the balancing test? And Harvey said not just balanced but ignored. Greg or Jorge? I see Greg's hand is up. Greg, could you respond to that?
Yes. This is Greg. The way I read this, and we can certainly write this in here if we want to, is that they cannot be ignored. They need to be balanced. So I think a balancing implies that all will be taken into account, but that there may be situations where, as they say, less than perfect fidelity to one or more core values will result. And I think it's perhaps not quite right to talk about violating core values since they're intended to be guidance. I think it's when we get back to the concept of perfect fidelity, that's kind of points to the fact that I think that when looking at how any particular core balance is, core value is dealt with, it's balanced against others. So one core value may be less important in a particular situation or less respected versus another core value, but none of them, I think, can be ignored. That would suggest a kind of failure to balance the core values against each other. So that's kind of the way I look at it. Thanks. And I see Aubrey is saying that she actually couldn't hear, so...
And I see David McCauley is responding with, where one core value is honored, another might be partially honored or not honored in a balancing test, it seems. And I think we have a question about this out to the legal team, about the balancing process. I think a balancing process in which one core value is ignored doesn't seem like a proper balance, right? At least that's what I would say, David. Or would you be able to think of a situation in which a balancing could be created in a negation of one and giving the full way to the other?
Niels, hi. It's David McCauley. Can you hear me?
Hi, we hear you excellently. Glad you're coming.
To answer your question, I would just say that I agree with Greg. I think in a balancing test, as long as you do in fact balance the possibly competing interests, it's not ignored. And the reason I use the word honor, it seems to me that if a core value is not honored as the result of a balancing test, the effect may be the same, but the action was not the same as, quote, violating that core value. And so we're being asked, I mean, it's a fair question, but we're also being asked to look into the future where there's a million possibilities. And so my presumption is probably there are some cases where one core value, when it's honored, would obviate the honoring of another. I just can't think of a good example. But so I think as long as it's considered and not ignored, the action of not honoring it is not the same as violating it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. David, I see a remark from Jorge Cancio, who is having it a bit stronger than considered, because he says normally in a balancing test you need to address each and every factor, and here each core value, and motivate how this is done and with what result. And this also resonates with the question of John Laprise, who asked, so on a given decision slash issue, could the community demand of ICANN an explanation of how a particular core value was weighed, applied, respected, or balanced with another? So I think we might need to add a need to add a bit of text here on the balancing process, or wait until we get some more info from the ICANN legal team on how the balancing process actually works. I see Greg's hand is up. Greg, please come in.
Hi, it's Greg again. There seems to be a lot of background noise. It seems to now perhaps have gone away or not. I think that this is a situation, first, where we, if we look at the last sentence of the quoted bylaw at the top of the page, says the result of the balancing must serve a policy developed through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process or otherwise best serve ICANN's mission. But I think that's somewhat of a implicit filter in how to deal with the balancing test. Again, you have to look back to serving ICANN's mission or the specific policy that was developed. I think that, and then so Avery has asked, if we have a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process that violates human rights, that is okay. I think that at this point you have an issue with the core values are supposed to guide ICANN. I think the result of a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process can't run over the core values taken as a whole, and certainly not the mission at all. Whether a particular bottom-up multi-stakeholder process might be subject to a balancing test where the human rights core value is met with less than perfect fidelity, that is possible. I guess we have an interesting kind of language clash here. We do talk about human rights being violated, but I don't think it's right to talk about core values being violated, because they are intended to be guidance and intended, when balanced against each other, not to be met perfectly and possibly even just duly taken into account. And again, we have the word respect being used with return in terms of core values. We also have respect being used in terms of human rights, but that's not in the context of the core values. So there's a little bit of linguistic spaghetti here that we may need to deal with and pick apart, because I don't think we can apply all the words exactly the same regardless of their context. And I think as Chris Lahat noted earlier, do you deal with human rights balancing in a proportional manner, although there is no proportionate test. There's no proportionality mentioned in with regard to the core value, per se, although it's not necessarily out of hand to suggest that it could be. So there's a lot of my bottom line, and then I'll stop nattering on, is I think there's a lot of relativism involved in dealing with core values, and there's absolutism when dealing with the mission, but that the relativistic nature of core value balancing still must, you know, attempt, I think, to meet each of the core values to the extent possible and balance each against the other, so that you can't just, you know, violate or fail to honor, fail to meet all of the core values. You're going to have a situation where some may fare better than others at the end of the day. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. To also ensure that we do not project too much into the process, I have made notes in the Google Docs of the different suggestions people have made around on proportionality and the documentation of the balancing process and how it can be done. But I propose that we wait on a response from ICANN Legal, which we will be getting before next meeting, on the relation between the commitments and core values. And maybe the ICANN staff can also relay this discussion to ICANN Legal so they can take this discussion with them in answering their questions. So the delay in the answering might actually benefit us getting better answers. But I see Cavus' hands is up. Cavus, please come in.
Neil, being a member of the drafting group does not mean that somebody monopolized the microphone and talk for minutes and minutes and minutes. Let the other people talk. I do not agree that something belongs, not or relates or concerns the ICANN that they should not do something. You cannot ask a legal point of the ICANN. Certainly they made something in favor of ICANN. So I don't agree that this particular case could not ask legal unit of the ICANN, because legal unit of ICANN in favor of ICANN. They are not neutral. And I don't think that we should push for American-speaking languages saying that cannot. Cannot is not correct. Either shall not, or should not, or must not. I don't agree that. People continue to talk and talk and talk. Let the other people talk also. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. But in direct reaction to the point you made earlier, we already changed cannot into must not, so your suggestion was directly accepted by the whole group, and we do not necessarily need to take ICANN Legal's words as wisdom, but it would definitely help us understand how they intend we should understand it and what their processes are for it, which could then enlighten our own independent discussion and decision-making. So I do propose that we let this rest for a moment. It's clear that the balancing process is not yet completely clear, especially where it comes to documentation of it and the relation between the commitments and the core values. So let's take that discussion to the list, and I suggest that we continue to the next row in the document, which is about respecting, which got a lot shorter, which mostly not happens when there was a lot of discussion, because this was one of the most contentious definitions in the discussion. Greg, would you like to introduce respecting?
Happy to do so. Sorry if some are getting tired of my voice, but I'll try to press on. Here we have written, ICANN will respect human rights as required by applicable law, and see below, unapplicable law. In order to do so, ICANN should avoid violating human rights and take human rights into account in developing its policies as well as in its decision-making processes.
Thank you very much, Greg. So I'd like to invite comments on that. The text has become very simple, very lightweight, very clear, I think, which is quite amazing with so many lawyers working on this. I'm happy to see that there is not much contention of it, so we move contention to other parts of the document, which is also good. This is great. So let's take this as a lesson. Let's rather be short than long. So, Jorge, I do not know if you are on a better connection yet. No, okay. So then let's move to the next part on internationally recognized human rights. Jorge, would you like to introduce, or Greg? Jorge, would you like to give it a try this time? Or are you still on a bad connection?
Hello, do you hear me okay?
We hear you very well.
Well, I guess that all of you can read what is in the text. We've tried to be quite concise also on this part. We mention in the first sentence that there is a range of international human rights declarations and covenants that could be relevant to ICANN's human rights core value. And with a footnote, we make reference with an open list to the most important ones. So that's perhaps the first element. And then in accordance with what is generally understood, we include to the text that none of these instruments has a direct application to ICANN because they only create obligations for states. We then clarify that by committing to one or more of these international instruments, nation states are expected to embed human rights in their national legislation. As we know, in many of, or in all of the jurisdictions I can operate, it will be subject to the national law that implements international instruments. The second para will clarify that internationally recognized human rights, The reference to this in the bylaw should not be read in isolation. It has to be also read together with and limited by the reference as required by applicable law. And as a consequence, under the human rights core value, international human rights instruments are not directly applicable to ICANN beyond what is provided for in applicable law. So we restate in a way the idea I mentioned before. Rather, only those human rights that are required by applicable law will be relevant to ICANN. And finally, the third para mentions that depending on the jurisdiction in which ICANN operates, the law applicable to its operations may vary, and thus the human rights applicable to ICANN's operations will vary as well. As we know, international human rights instruments may be implemented in different degrees by different jurisdictions, so it will depend on where the relevant actions from ICANN taking place, or under which jurisdiction they might be, they may be considered, the human rights obligations might be maybe a bit different. But finally, we also make reference to the idea that ICANN understands that whatever, in a sense, whatever the precise applicable law, that internationally recognized human rights, including those expressed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, can guide its decisions and actions. So that beyond what is in the applicable law, internationally recognized human rights are always a possible guidance for ICANN's actions and decisions. So I hope not to have included too much interpretation by my own into these comments. And I think perhaps we can open the floor to comments from the subgroup.
Thank you very much, Jorge, for introducing this part. I see Cavus' hand is up. Cavus, please come in.
Yes, I ask you please take this piece by piece, but not all three paragraphs together. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. What are other questions that are and comments that are up?
Excuse me, do you ask me?
If you have a comment, please come in, Cavus.
No, on the first paragraph, starting with there are up to legislation, I have no comment, and I agree with that. Then go to the next one. I suggest that you take it sub-paragraph by sub-paragraph, but not the entire column. That is what I suggest.
But there don't seem to be any other comments, so please let us know what your comments are on the other paragraphs, Cavus.
I have no comment on any of these three paragraphs. All of them all together address the situation properly. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So if no one has any comments on these paragraphs, I would like to go to the next one, and which is the text on applicable law. Jorge, would you like to take the honors again?
Well, Niels, do you hear me? Okay.
Yes, very well.
So if we have to follow on this constructive path, perhaps people need more time to digest these elements, I guess. Well, on the as required by applicable law, we're again back to the concept of applicable law, which already was very relevant in the previous part. And if I remember well, this text goes back to a contribution made by David McCauley, It very generally states that applicable law refers to the body of law that binds ICANN at any given time, in any given circumstance, and in any relevant jurisdiction. So it's very general indeed. It consists of statutes, rules, regulations, etc., as well as judicial opinions where appropriate, I guess mostly in common law countries, and it is a dynamic concept in as much as laws, regulations, etc., change over time. So I don't know if there are any comments on this very general description.
I see Andrew Mack has his hands up. Andrew, please come in.
Yes, just a quick question, if I might. The way that this is, I heard this, it sounds like there's one set of applicable law And I'm wondering, and maybe this is covered elsewhere, maybe I'm just misunderstanding it, but what if there are two sets of a law where we touch that are effectively in conflict?
That gets addressed in the next paragraph.
Okay, my apologies. I had a feeling it might. Thanks.
No problem. And Daniel and Avery, I see your questions in the chat. Jorge, would you like to respond to the questions of Daniel and Avery? The questions are that Daniel asked, when I read the respecting explanation, this implies that ICANN has no obligation to respect human rights except where national laws directly place ICANN under those obligations. And Avery asks, does that not make this meaningless, or rather it just says forget about human rights, just obey the law? I see that David McCauley is responding to that. So, David, do you want to do so on the audio bridge?
Thank you, Niels. Excuse me, it's David McCauley for the record. I just saw Avery's comment. I was out of Adobe there for a short while, but I don't think it makes it meaningless, and I do think that it sort of takes us back to the proportionality discussion that Greg was talking about a few minutes ago, and I think that there is a possibility that at times various human rights may be not in, or almost in opposition to each other. If I could use an example, it's not a perfect example, but one of the human rights people have is to free expression, and another human right that people has is to ownership of their property. And yet, if someone's property is a copyright, is an expression of an idea, there is a fair use concept that lets free expressionists use it to some extent. That's not a perfect example, I agree, but there are cases where one right will give way slightly or maybe even more than slightly to another. I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but I don't agree with the concern that Aubrey's expressing, but I'm not expressing myself well. So I'll just say that for now and give it some thought. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David, for that explanation. I see two hands are up, so let's go to Greg. Greg, please come in.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, again, for the record. I think I look at this. I agree with what David said, but I think the question is going to a slightly different point, which is, in essence, what is the point of the human rights bylaw when we have the limitation to applicable law? I think the point of it is that ICANN has, by this bylaw, an active responsibility, albeit in the core value guidance sense, to avoid violating human rights, as was noted. And that, you know, avoidance is an active term, in a sense. So it's not just a matter of abiding by the law, but actively seeking to avoid human rights violations. And that kind of goes back more, I think, to the respect definition, as we discussed. We really obviously have to read these two together. And, you know, the second part is that human rights are to be taken into account in developing policy and in decision-making. You know, one might say that, you know, all applicable laws should be taken into account when dealing with policy, but given the huge bulk of applicable law, some of which, a lot of which may not be relevant even though it's applicable, I think the idea is to kind of highlight human rights and to express the need to be certain that efforts are being made to avoid human rights violations and that human rights are actually being taken into account in this regard. That doesn't elevate human rights above other
core values, but it does kind of put it, squarely in the sights of those making policy and decision that are going on. I see a comment that Daniel made. I disagree with the sentence.
Daniel, also, sorry, Greg, go ahead.
I just briefly, because I know I don't want to monopolize the discussion, but the point is that through the laws that are made by states, whether with regard to international treaties and conventions or otherwise, that obligates entities and persons to respect human rights. And that's, I think, the point of the section. The point is that the international conventions and treaties bind states. That's what international conventions and treaties do. But that doesn't mean that there's no method by which those obligations flow down to entities and persons. The way that they do flow down to entities and persons as a legal obligation is through the law. Beyond that, we're talking about other things that are not law. That's kind of where the line gets drawn here. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. I see David and Jorge have their hands up. David, please come in.
Thank you, Niels. It's David McCauley. I would like to just respond to a question that Aubrey put in the chat. It's a good question. And it is, if there is no law protecting an HR, do we still need to care about the HR? And it's a codicil to what Greg was just saying. And as I think back to Workstream 1, it is my recollection that one of the concerns the board expressed was that when they undertake a formal expression of respect, that it needed to be within the confines of applicable law in order not to be bogged down with litigation, IRPs, whatever, whereby people were trying to extend human rights law. That is a domain properly left to states and to courts, et cetera, at least. That's my recollection of the board's concern, and I think it's a fair concern. And so my answer to Aubrey would be, it's not that they don't care. It's that in a formal undertaking of respect, the applicable law limitation, whatever you want to call it, makes sense for the reasons that were expressed in Workstream 1. And so that's my recollection. I think it's a fair statement by the board, a fair insight. And I don't think it's a matter of not caring. In fact, I think people have heard me say this before, that all things considered, ICANN is one of the more notable observers of human rights in a public forum. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. Jorge, please come in.
Hello. Do you hear me okay?
We hear you.
Okay. I think this question put forward by Avery and others touches on a very sensitive part of the core value and of its framework of interpretation. And I guess that in the end, it must be the community which has to put the balance on the right point. I think there's an element here that is stressed in the framework of interpretation as it stands now, that consists in making clear that obligations as such only are limited to what comes from applicable law, and this applicable law or might be, as has been said, implementations of international human rights. In some countries, these international instruments are directly applicable, so they might also be directly applicable to ICANN if ICANN operates in such countries, and if those instruments also go beyond the, an application only to states. That is one part. But I think that there are also other elements in the framework of interpretation, as in the concept of respecting, and in some mentions we've included in under the internationally recognized human rights part, where mention is made that even beyond what is strictly required by applicable law, internationally recognized human rights serve as a guidance to the decisions and actions of ICANN. So probably it's not something that can be demanded from ICANN, but it's a part of its obligation to respect human rights. It's part of the more positive concept of respecting. But as I said before, this is the proposal from the small group, the consensus that could be found in the small group, and it's up to the community to set the balance right. And in addition to this, in a later stage, this core value should, at least in my view, be implemented by ICANN according to international standards. And this would also give more weight to this core value, and it surely would give an added value beyond what is strictly required by applicable law. Because in the end, if we were to construe this element as only restricting ICANN to do what is already being required by applicable law, it would be a bit meaningless. But I think that there are elements in the framework of interpretation that set us beyond that step. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jorge. And here I would like to close the queue and go to Marcus. And Marcus, please keep it limited because we're almost at the top of the hour, which does give you the space for some famous last words. Please come in, Marcus. Marcus, we do not hear you.
Can you hear me now?
We hear you well. Great to hear you, Mark.
Okay,
please.
My apologies. I know I said my apologies for making the noise when we joined. I'm here with Anne-Rachel in Paris where you attend the meeting, and there's also some background noise. I was going to say good progress, and on this particular issue of applicable law, I would like to draw your attention to the OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises that addresses the question that applicable law in some countries may well be below accepted, internationally accepted human rights standards. And in those cases, that the U.S. government committed itself to asking corporations incorporated in the U.S. to commit themselves to higher standards. So let's say if the second paragraph, for instance, if ICANN operates in a country where labor standards are well below what is norm in the U.S., that the company there would be required to apply higher standards. I'm just drawing your attention to that, and I think it might be beneficial for this exercise actually to draw on this OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises. They have been approved by all OECD countries, including the United States. This is not hard law, but it's international soft law, and it is applicable to corporations incorporated in the U.S. This is a suggestion, and obviously I'm not speaking on behalf of the board. This is just my personal input into this discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Marcus. And I think there are a lot of very good points being made. I feel that we're coming closer to each other. We're not there yet, and we haven't finished our first complete reading of this document. I would like to really invite people to continue the discussion on the list so we can see if we can work on some text that would work for some people this week to build some bridges. We already had some solutions on proportionality, on must not, and we are also awaiting the input from ICANN Legal. All in all, I think we made great progress, but we also still have some steps to go. And so I'm greatly looking forward to continuing the discussion with you all this week on the list and continuing with the reading of this document next week. I would like to also signal at the horizon that there is also the document on the policies and procedures, which asks us also about the, recommendations for implementation. And I think some of the questions or worries people have might also have a place in that document. So it's the framework of interpretation for the bylaw should be really be the framework of interpretation. So let's put the right things in the right documents and have the right discussions in the right place. But I think we're well underway and we're making great progress. Thanks all everyone for participating. I'm greatly looking forward to see you all on the list this week and at the call next week at our same hour, Tuesday, 7 UTC. Thanks all very much, and I can stop. You can stop the recording. Bye all.